Talking. I say working. I can all say bidding, and I can say working. It takes a little longer. It's not my normal way, but you know what? If that's the, if that what people want to be most worried about, then we've solved every other problem in the state.
That'll take more than a couple of G's. Illinois is staring down a deficit in the billions, and Rauner has been as sparing with his budget ideas as he's been with a certain letter of the alphabet. We're expecting to learn more in his budget address this Wednesday. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Ain't nothing but a G bang, baby.
And it's Morning Edition on WILL AM 580. The time is 8:49. The markets are closed for President's Day, so no commodity reports this morning on AM 580. Classical music is running as usual right now with Vic G. Geronimo on FM 90.9. The closing market report will air on AM 580 at 2:06 p.m. Coming up on Morning Edition, we'll explore parties at the White House, not political parties, but, you know, parties where liquor is poured. David Green talks to Brian Abrams, author of Party Like a President, True Tales of Inebriation, Lechery, and Mischief from the Oval Office. That's coming up on Morning Edition on WILL.
When writing promo spots to encourage 100 new friends during the month of February, I ran into a little problem. In just 30 seconds, it's nearly impossible to list all the reasons Illinois Public Media is worthy of your support. So instead, I'll just have to hope there's something about two great radio stations, three outstanding TV channels, multiple streaming options, and an information-rich website that will encourage you to become our latest supporter. To find out how, go to will.illinois.edu/newfriends.
In the weather forecast for today, there's lots of snow falling in southern Illinois, but just a chance of light snow this morning in Champaign County, where the forecast calls for it to be mostly cloudy otherwise, a high of 22, northeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mostly cloudy tonight, the low around 12. Tomorrow, a chance of flurries resuming with a high of 22. Cloudy skies now, 13 degrees with a wind chill of 1 at Willett Airport, 14 degrees, a wind chill of 0 at Decatur. It's 13 degrees now at Friends Plaza in Urbana.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Students who are the first in their family to go to college and come from low-income families are four times more likely than other students to drop out in the first year. Many go to community colleges, but those who go to big selective four-year institutions in particular face some big challenges when they get to campus. Michigan Radio's Jennifer Guerra reports.
Chris Reynolds will never forget his first day at the University of Michigan. He and his dad got up super early and drove 9.5 hours from Sellersville, a blue-collar factory town in Pennsylvania, to Ann Arbor.
My father literally just dropped me off and then left.
His dad couldn't afford a hotel, so they took about an hour to unpack the car, say their goodbyes, and his dad drove off. Chris Reynolds was officially on his own. He thought he was pretty prepared. He had a dorm room, a meal plan, a couple $100 to last until he found a job. What he wasn't prepared for was how lonely and out of place he felt on campus.
For example, I would ask, you know, someone would ask me, like, where do my parents go to college? And I said, well, my parents didn't go to college. They'd be like, oh, okay, so what do your parents do? It's like, well, my mom is housekeeper, and my dad's unemployed. And then they're like, oh, okay.
It was hard for other students to understand that for us to go to college, we were taking a big risk.
This is Chris Reynolds' friend, Anna Garcia. She's a senior at U of M, and like Reynolds, she's the first in her family to go to college. Garcia grew up in Lincoln Park, a blue-collar city about 40 miles from U of M's campus. Culture-wise, though, it might as well be 400 miles away.
People in my hometown thought that I was really stuck up all of a sudden because I decided to go to Michigan, and they know that Michigan is a very prestigious college.
Garcia and Reynolds met at a first-generation student support group on campus, which was nothing short of a lifeline in many ways. They found friends, people they could relate to, but Garcia says she could have used more help.
I know of many students who have left after their freshman year because they just felt like they couldn't find their place on campus.
Was there ever a point where you thought you were going to leave?
Absolutely. Absolutely. My whole first semester, I thought of transferring.
She stuck it out, though, and she's set to graduate as a pre-med English major this spring. Still, she hated how she had to constantly out herself as a low-income, first-generation student.
I think that is a very apt metaphor for thinking about how these students experience being in this very class-exclusive environment.
It's been 20 years since researcher Jennifer Engel was in college, and she's only recently started to admit to her colleagues that she was the first in her family to graduate. Engel has spent her career researching what life is like for low-income, first-generation college students, and she agrees with Garcia that overall, schools don't do enough. She says here's how schools can step up their game. More financial aid, more supports like mentors, and this part is key, they need to be more proactive so students don't have to out themselves when they need help.
So the outreach to low-income first-generation students needs to be really intrusive on the part of the institution.
For his part, University of Michigan junior Chris Reynolds agrees. He says U of M is great at helping students like him pay for college. He's set to graduate next year with a degree in aerospace engineering and, fingers crossed, no debt. But he says it takes more than money to make students like him feel welcome.
Just to have someone in the university come up and tell us, like, you belong here and we're so excited to have you here, that would have changed everything for me.
For NPR News, I'm Jennifer Guerra in Ann Arbor.
On this President's Day, here's something you might not know about President Franklin D. Roosevelt.
He was an awful bartender.
That's Brian Abrams. His new book is called Party Like a President, True Tales of Inebriation, Lechery, and Mischief from the Oval Office. President's Day, not usually a big party holiday, but why not? Just avoid letting FDR make your drinks.
He would mix the oddest combinations of garnishes with his, you know, martinis, cocktails. And I think that he really had a fondness for the mixology culture that was born in the Prohibition years.
He just wasn't good at it.
No, it was terrible. I mean, there was a Supreme Court justice who poured his cocktails in a potted plant almost every time.
If this was going on in the White House, this kind of drinking, I mean, is there a moment, a president, an incident that sort of stands out to you and things just got out of hand in that building?
The one to talk about before any is Andrew Jackson's inauguration in March of 1829. You know, we're talking about someone with no college education. He's a military hero. You know, his blue-collar type constituents really looked up to him. And so when he was being sworn in, constituents from Tennessee would go to Washington to meet him. The trouble was, since John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson had two very combative elections, there was no real communication between both administrations in terms of security. So after Jackson had his swearing in on the portico, as far as he knew, he and just a select few others were going to go inside for, you know, some punch. There was no one to hold back the rest of the crowd.
There were no adults to kind of protect this place.
No. There was a lot of crystal that was broken, people standing on chairs to get a look at the president. He's getting, you know, pulled right and left by people. So staff, essentially, they started opening up the windows, and they dragged pails and buckets of this orange spiked punch out into the front lawn, and that definitely cleared out the White House. And I think Jackson even escaped through a window, too.
One question not answered for me in this book is which president you'd want to have a beer with.
I think I'm going to have to go with Gerald Ford.
Really?
I think so. Because at least we could talk about movies and music. If I said Chester A. Arthur, I don't know exactly what the conversation would sound like. But in the case of Ford, his first Air Force One flight, he is about to get his photograph taken. He had a martini in front of him because Ford generally drank two gin martinis on every Air Force One flight. And the photographer steps in and grabs the stem of the martini glass and says, "Oh, excuse me, Mr. President, let me just get this out of the way first." I mean, they must have loved him.
You mean it's kind of charming that he hadn't even thought of that? He's just being a regular guy holding a martini and is like, you know, whatever, take my picture.
Yeah, he's unassuming. I mean, there was also his first month or two in office, there was a dinner at the White House for the King of Jordan, and he was caught on the dance floor dancing to Jim Croce's Bad, Bad Leroy Brown.
Good song to dance to. Brian Abrams, the book is called Party Like a President, True Tales of Inebriation, Lechery, and Mischief from the Oval Office. It was great talking to you. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you.
Well, if you're lucky enough to have today off work, you're probably dancing too. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Morning trouble. You see, you stand about 6'4". All down town.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. President Obama ran for office as an anti-war candidate. Now he's asking Congress to approve military action against ISIS.
Now make no mistake, this is a difficult mission. And it will remain difficult for some time.
We'll speak with historian Julian Zelizer about presidents and war next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Weekdays starting at noon on AM 580.
There's more Morning Edition coming your way on WILL AM 580. In the weather forecast, mostly cloudy today, a chance of light snow this morning, the high 22. Mostly cloudy tonight, the low around 12. Another chance of snow flurries tomorrow through Wednesday. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, the high 22. Cloudy skies now, 13 degrees at Willard Airport. The wind chill 1, 14 degrees at Friends Plaza. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580 and WILL FM 90.9 HD3, Urbana.
Good morning. The attacker in Denmark who gunned down a film director in a cafe and a Jewish guard in a synagogue was cornered and killed by police. We'll have the latest on those terrorist attacks in this hour of Morning Edition from NPR News. On this President's Day, we take the measure of those who would be president with NPR's Ron Elving. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Of course, a book is the time-honored way to signal I'm running. Political and personal, a book can introduce a candidate and put him or her on the road. Also, a new documentary about black photographers from Reconstruction to today. And we'll remember poet laureate Philip Levine, who found poetry in the auto workers of Detroit. It's Monday, February 16th. The original bounty hunter Boba Fett, actor Jeremy Bullock, is 70. News is next.